Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
That's right. You are Locked On Broncos. It's time to drop some knowledge. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com, part of Scout Media, and now, of course, CBS Sports. And finally, reunited with me is my co-host, Luke Polglaze, the NFL draft analyst, the semi-pro football coach himself. They said it would never happen, Luke, but here we are again together. What's good, brother?
You know, they said it would never happen, and then I got sick, so the eventual reunion got pushed back a little bit further. But I'm good. Good to be back, and good to have the crew reunited.
The band is back together, and we are committed.
Blues Brothers.
That's right. Daily podcast. We're here for you 5 days a week on your Denver Broncos. And we're not just going to regurgitate the news. We're going to do a deep dive on your favorite team. So help us out. Retweet the episodes on Twitter. Share them on Facebook. Share them on Reddit. Help us get the message out. And, of course, check out our work over at MileHighHuddle.com. We have killer premium Broncos content, more deep dive type of stuff for the Broncoholics out there. Don't forget, our subscribers get 10% off on tickets, 10% off on Broncos team merchandise through Fanatics, which is the same merchandiser that the Denver Broncos and the NFL utilize. Also, follow the show on Twitter, at Locked On Broncos. I was just looking at our analytics today. There are, I don't know, what was it, 12,000 weekly listeners to this show. We've got 220 followers on Locked On Broncos. So help us out. Go to the Twitter handle, at Locked On Broncos, click follow. Just open it up on your phone, get it done. We'd really appreciate it. The home of our show, Locked On Broncos, is Audio Boom, but also make sure to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. The season's in the books. It's officially over. 2017 is in full effect, and now the Broncos are moving into the offseason, free agency, the draft, and we're going to cover it in depth. So just you're not going to want to miss a single episode. Make sure you're subscribing. Now, we got the big game to talk about. I touched on it a little bit yesterday, holding down the fort solo. But, Luke, it was an ignominious finish for the NFC champion Atlanta Falcons, losing to the New England Patriots in overtime, 34-28. They blew a three-score lead. It was easily the biggest collapse in Super Bowl history and maybe the biggest in NFL history when you consider the scale. Luke, first chance that we've had to really talk about the game. What were some of your impressions?
Well, I think actually at one point it was a four-score lead too, wasn't it? I mean, it was 28 to 3, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yep. Yeah, 25 points, four scores, and somehow New England came back. I mean, you know, no matter what your perspective is on football or on quarterbacks, I think first of all you got to say that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time, if not the greatest player. I mean, five rings. Come on. That's ridiculous.
In Denver, in Broncos country, it's easy to hate Tom Brady because of how good he is. And everyone's so sick of the evil empire. But yesterday, or I should say 2 days ago now, was a case in point. And you got to tip your hat to this guy. He is the best quarterback to play the game in the modern era. Let's say that.
Like it or not, I mean, there's no doubting the fact that if you were given the chance to have him on your team, you know, no matter what your allegiance is, I think you'd have to jump at that chance. I mean, the guy has a ring for every finger on one hand. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets a couple for the other at some point, too. I mean, he's that good. He's still getting it done. But really, I think this game was a bit of a war of attrition. And it looked, in a lot of ways to me, it looked like the Clemson-Alabama game that we saw earlier this year in the national championship, which is that in the end, both the Patriots and Clemson ran 99 offensive plays. I mean, the other team's offense just couldn't keep the defense off the field, so that defense stayed on. They got tired. They started making miscommunications, and in the end, you know, the Patriots found a way to make them pay for it. And I mean, in all honesty, once that game went to overtime, did anybody have any doubts how it was going to end? You know, you can't doubt Brady when he's on fire like that.
You can't. And you look at the plays. I mean, it's actually, when you look at the box score, it was so lopsided by the end. New England ran 93 plays playing catch up in that mad scramble in the fourth quarter to Atlanta's 46. They dropped 546 total yards on the Atlanta Falcons to 344 from Atlanta. 13 drives for the Patriots. Here's where it gets kind of screwy. The Patriots had 13 total drives. Atlanta had 11, and yet New England, Luke, doubled the amount of, almost doubled anyway, the total plays.
Right, and I mean, that Edelman catch. Can we talk about that Edelman catch? Because as ridiculous as the Julio Jones one, that Edelman catch might be the single greatest catch I've ever seen. I mean, Odell Beckham, sure, he has an argument, but man, that ball was inches from the ground, and Edelman's hands were well away from it. I mean, just top to bottom, it was a ridiculous offensive performance by the Patriots when they needed it most. I mean, previously, a team that had had a pick six in a Super Bowl had never lost. That'll tell you what that is.
Yeah, it was interesting watching the replay of that catch from Edelman. And for whatever reason, it reminded me of the blockbuster movie, Sandra Bullock, Gravity, you know, with everything moving in suspension, you know, there's no gravity in space. Everything's kind of slow-mo, and it was like, how in the hell, in that split fraction of time that he actually had to collect the ball, you know, see the ball, collect the ball, and haul it in before it was able to touch the ground. I mean, I think you look at that play and, you know, the David Tyree catch in the Super Bowl a few years back, gosh, I guess it's about 10 years ago now, that was phenomenal. But that Julian Edelman catch, two guys, if I remember right, fighting for the ball. Edelman, two defenders, that is. Edelman comes down with it. It's got to be one of the all-time plays in Super Bowl history.
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, I was talking about it with my dad when it happened. And, you know, I said that has to be one of the greatest Super Bowl catches ever. And he says, well, it is if they win. And they won. So we're talking about it. And we're not talking about that Julio sideline catch, which if they had won, I think we're still talking about. I mean, that catch in particular, in that kind of situation, the quarterback's taught to throw, you know, face mask or higher. And he went up and got it. I mean, that ball, if it's underthrown, if it's thrown a little bit short, that's an interception. That's a turnover. But instead, Julio just makes it absolutely ridiculous catch. And so much so that I believe I heard that Belichick, you know, he had the challenge flag out, you know, ready to throw it. And then he saw the replay and he's like, no, I that's ridiculous. I'm not challenging that.
You're a coach, Luke. Belichick and the Patriots have basically a protocol. They call heads every single time. And it served them well in overtime. They called heads. They won the toss. And really, when they converted that second two-point conversion at the end of regulation, well, almost the end of regulation, that's when I really knew. I said to myself and others I was watching the game with, that's all she wrote. Patriots are winning this game. It's going to overtime. And then that coin flip, is there some kind of superstition to that? Is there some kind of science to that? What do you know about calling heads on the coin flip?
That's just random. I mean, there some people will say just call heads or tails. I mean, of course, there's the kind of the group that just always calls tails. You know, tails never fails. But you know, it's if there's some fine science to tossing the coin. If anybody's discovered it, I am sure it's Belichick.
What I'm wondering is, when is the last time a quarterback won NFL MVP? Okay, actually played in the Super Bowl and won the game? Because you think back, this year, Matt Ryan, loss. Last year, Cam Newton against the Broncos, loss. I'm not sure who won it in 14. In 2013, Peyton Manning wins MVP, loss. That there's something to that. Like, there's some superstition there, and maybe it ties back into the whole defense wins championships mantra. But if your quarterback won MVP in the regular season and they're set to appear in the Super Bowl, you got to start worrying about your squad.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, since 2007, since 2000, only seven of the 16 MVPs have even made it to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's ridiculous to have something even as close as that. The last one to win the Super Bowl was in 1999. The last MVP of the Super or last MVP of the regular season to win the Super Bowl as well. And of course, back in 1999, first of all, different world. I mean, no Tom Brady at the time.
Sure.
And that was Kurt Warner back in the day for St. Louis. So, you know, it's a different world, and it's a world in which the MVP of the regular season we see so often that it's just the deepest roster that's going to prevail in the playoffs, and not necessarily the most valuable player. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's a dangerous scenario when you have Madden curses and most valuable player curses. So, you know, there's something to be said for being really successful, but maybe not that successful.
It was one heck of a game, and you got to tip your hat to the hoodie, to Tom Brady. You know, it was a phenomenal performance. But one thing that came out of the game that I thought was interesting that I've been hearing the last couple of days, Luke, is, you know, Kyle Shanahan, offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons, of course, during the Super Bowl, getting thrown under the bus around the football world big time. And there's no doubt, Luke, that some of his play calling at the end especially was questionable. I'm thinking primarily of the fourth quarter. However, I mean, you got to also flip that coin and look at the fact that it was because of his offensive unit, really, that the Falcons even made the Super Bowl and even got up on the New England Patriots 28-3 at one point, notwithstanding, of course, Alford's pick six. Luke, as a coach, you're a guy that does the X's and O's on a daily basis. Where did Shanahan go wrong late in the game?
Well, I don't even know if this was kind of a X's and O's things just so much as personnel. I mean, once Tevin Coleman went down injured, they were down to one running back. That is Devontae Freeman. We saw what he did on the first drive. And after going up 28-3, that 25-point lead, they had just five running plays. You know, and very, I don't even think, maybe one or two were play action passes. Mm. You know, they never sold the run game. And this is a team that's snapping the ball with 20 seconds left on the play clock. You know, suck that play clock down as much as you can. Yeah. Run the ball, take some time off the clock. That didn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, I don't know this for a fact. If I had to guess, the reason that Shanahan's going out there and throwing the ball so much is he's going to go out and try and get, you know, a quick first down and then, you know, take his time from there running the ball so that he can keep the defense on the sideline for longer. So he's going to kind of take those shots to get the first down, to get that extra time off the clock. But in the end, he just couldn't make it happen.
One of the things that jumped out to me, as I was watching the game, that I was thinking about is, you know, why didn't somebody put a bug in Shanahan's ear? Whether it was the head coach, you know, the head coach's got to be thinking of it. Quality control guys, analytics guys that are playing the odds, they're paying attention to the clock, management, and all that stuff. Telling Shanahan, look, it's time to run the football. We need to suck some of this clock. And it's not like the Atlanta Falcons running game, even without Tevin Coleman, was chopped liver. I mean, Devontae Freeman made some phenomenal plays all year long. And he didn't disappoint in the Super Bowl, Luke. But I just wondered. I mean, was it I gotta wonder. Was it a total, organizational error, just losing sight of that, or do you think that was just something that Shanahan is the primary reason why things got out of control there? They lost sight of the priority. They lost sight of the clock. They lost sight of the strategy and playing the odds.
Well, I think part of it is that, and you know, there are definitely guys who I've heard argue among coaches that that you're going to have a coach who's, you know, making the calls from the box and not from the sidelines, that he gets a little bit too disconnected sometimes and just kind of gets stuck inside his own head and disconnected from what players are talking on the sidelines.
Like a glorified Madden player.
Yeah, exactly. And sure, there's an argument to be made for that. I mean, Kyle Shanahan is a professional. He's an NFL head coach now of the 49ers. You know, that's a little bit too much. That's hyperbole, in my opinion. But, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that the play calling was questionable. At the same time, though, New England is expecting run there. They're not dropping into pass. So the players have that advantage, and they still need to execute there. So for Atlanta's offense to struggle like it did, I mean, you still got the MVP quarterback at the helm. You have probably the best wide receiver in football. I mean, the offense struggled as well, and it wasn't just the play calling, in my opinion. To pin this on Shanahan is too nearsighted for the bigger picture.
Well, and I would agree with you, and it brings me back to kind of the salient point that I wanted us to land on here. And it's no secret that, you know, I was I was hoping the Broncos would choose Kyle Shanahan to be the new head coach over Vance Joseph. John Elway and the Broncos brain trust obviously went a different direction. Now, Luke, I'm hearing from analysts, some fans, you know, social media, that the Broncos dodged a bullet in Shanahan, who, as you mentioned, was officially named head coach of the San Francisco 49ers on Monday, where he signed a six-year deal, reportedly. He's going to join the newly appointed general manager, John Lynch, and former Broncos director of player personnel, Adam Peters. What's your response to that, though, Luke, to those who say the Broncos dodged a bullet with Shanahan? Because at this point, Vance Joseph, other than building a staff, we don't really have anything yet to judge him on.
If you're going to judge the offensive coordinator behind the number one offense in football in 2016 over a game in which his offense scored 28 points in the first three quarters, come on. I mean, that's missing the bigger picture. I mean, you know, sure, he did, you know, the offensive play calling was just poor in the second half. And, you know, again, you could arguably say that it cost them the game. I certainly have, you know, mentioned that here. But, I mean, come on. At the same time, this guy just led the number one offense in football. His quarterback won MVP. They put up 28 points in the Super Bowl. I mean, let's get real here. Kyle Shanahan had a great season. I don't think anybody in San Francisco is really going to be questioning that signing today. I think they have to be excited for what he can do. I definitely think that there were kind of some questionable aspects of the game, but nobody's perfect. I mean, not even Belichick. I mean, they were down 25 points, arguably the greatest head coach of all time, and they still came back and won. So nobody's perfect. I definitely think there's room to build for San Francisco, and I think that there's definitely a lot that he can do in San Francisco. The question becomes, what's he going to do in San Francisco, where that roster is just so devoid of talent compared to Atlanta? He doesn't have a Julio Jones. He doesn't even have a
frankly.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people are saying Matt Schaub might follow him there. I mean, exactly. I mean, at this point, he doesn't have a quarterback. He doesn't even have a wide receiver, barely a run game. I mean, this guy's going to have to basically build an offense from square one. Maybe it's Kaepernick. Maybe it's Torrey Smith. Maybe it's Carlos Hyde. But he's got to start getting pieces in place in San Francisco.
Matt Schaub, I'm surprised, is still even in the NFL. But I am intrigued. I'll be honest. I am intrigued by the prospect of John Lynch stepping in as a general manager and working with Kyle Shanahan. And as you mentioned, though, I mean, they have several obstacles and a roster replete with holes. But I think the first order of business for them as an organization is figuring out their quarterback situation and then moving forward. Colin Kaepernick, I mean, I think they're going to be tempted to instigate a reclamation project in Kaepernick because of how productive he was for that period of time under Jim Harbaugh. But I think at this stage, I mean, as an analyst, I wouldn't touch Colin Kaepernick with a 10-foot pole as it comes to being, I mean, maybe consider him as a backup or something, but I would not consider trying to build an offense around him as my quarterback.
I mean, yeah, at this point, he's shown some good things and he's shown some poor things. And I think what you can really do when you come in with Shanahan is, you know, he's obviously had some experience working with so many different types of quarterback, is he's really kind of able to manipulate and kind of build the offense to suit the player. So I think he has a real shot to do that here here going into San Francisco.
The prospect that the Broncos dodged a bullet with Kyle Shanahan is just frankly overblown. And again, we don't really know yet fully what to expect from Vance Joseph. Really, the only thing we have to judge him on is the decisions that were made to fill out his coaching tree. And I like it. I like what I've seen so far. It's highly encouraging. I like what it means for Paxton Lynch. I think he kept the band together mostly on the defensive side of the ball, keeping familiarity in place with Joe Woods. And so, you know, for those of you that subscribe to the "In Elway We Trust" mantra, hey, so far so good. And as for Shanahan, tough break. I mean, that's got to be humiliating, the way they collapsed and just the comedy of errors that was that fourth quarter for Atlanta. But he's stepping into a new role as a head coach. And granted, it wasn't the job he wanted, but there's only 32 of them in the world. Now, real quick, according to a study from the Interactive Advertising Bureau and Edison Research, consumers are highly likely to purchase from podcast sponsors. According to the survey of 1,000 podcast listeners, nearly two-thirds, 65% of them, were more willing to consider purchasing products and services that they learned about during a podcast. 60% added that given equal price and quality, they prefer to purchase from companies that advertise on their favorite podcast. So that's some powerful data. If you're listening to this show as a business owner and you'd like to reach the male demographic, particularly between the ages of 18 and 44, you should consider sponsoring this podcast because 98% of the Locked On Broncos listenership fits within that demographic, 18 to 40-year-old males. Our rates are very reasonable. Feel free to reach out to us at LockedOnBroncos@gmail.com to talk about it. Now, Luke, real quick before we get out of here, an interesting piece of news that we published on MileHighHuddle.com involves next year's Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52. The initial Vegas odds have dropped, and although the New England Patriots lead the way as the team with the best odds to win it, the whole thing next year, Patriots come in at the top 5-1 odds, then the Cowboys 9-1, Green Bay 9-1, Pittsburgh 12-1, Atlanta Falcons 14-1, and then your Denver Broncos 16-1. In the AFC, they are the third highest, or I should say third best odds. Minnesota Vikings then check in at 16-1, Oakland Raiders 16-1, Seattle Seahawks 16-1, and then rounding out the top 10, Carolina Panthers 25-1. Luke, does that come as a surprise to you? Because frankly, I mean, I know that the Broncos are going to have that sizzle as long as Elway's in the front office, but without a viable quarterback, do you really think that they are deserving of being at least tied for the third highest odds to make it to Super Bowl 52 and win it?
You know, I mean, I think you can make an argument that they do deserve those odds based on the fact that it is a weak conference that they're in. You know, that there's definitely, beside the Patriots, there's not a lot of other teams that you can really say are that kind of high powered. I think it's interesting that Kansas City doesn't appear in those odds, you know, even below Carolina, evidently, based on the fact that they were in kind of the mix here this season in the divisional round, getting the number two seed. I think that's kind of interesting, but I mean, quite honestly, I don't see why Denver's that high. They don't even have a real quarterback identified yet. They have a first-year head coach. I mean, this is kind of a complete scenario for them in which it looks like a rebuild. Of course, Vance Joseph hasn't really said that it's going to be a rebuild. He's quite clear that he thinks it's going to be a reload. But I think right now I would put them even at third, not in the conference, but probably third in their own division. I think that the Raiders really, if you know Derek Carr obviously makes a full recovery, as I think he will. I think he's going to be the powerhouse for this division. You say what you will about Alex Smith and Andy Reid, but they've been a consistent force in this division. And even if they're not able to take the next step, I think that they can hold out for a wild card spot at the very least. And then that leaves Denver and San Diego. I think San Diego's trending the wrong direction. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see their defense next year transitioning to a 4-3 from all accounts, which of course fits Joey Bosa to a T. So it's going to be interesting to see if their defense is going to have a little bit more resolved and perform a little bit better for Phillip Rivers. But honestly, I think Denver is going to end up third in the division next year. I think they can challenge for a wild card spot, but a lot of chips have to fall correctly for that to happen.
Man, it's hard to think of the Chargers being in Los Angeles off the cuff when you're just dropping knowledge. You want to say San Diego, as you did multiple times in your
I think I did. Yeah, I was going to say.
And I was just nodding along with you. I'm like, yep, uh-huh, San Diego. Oh, wait a minute. Los Angeles. But I'm with you. Here's the thing. The Broncos have one of the most balanced and stacked rosters in the NFL, and they have that going for them. And really, that's why you see it, and especially because of the defense and some of the skill position players on offense, that's why you see them checking in there with the odds. Third best in the AFC. But the reality is this. In the NFL, okay, you can go back and look at, let's just say, the last 10 years. Without an upper echelon quarterback, you're not making it to the Super Bowl. And, you know, you can try and trot out the argument that the Broncos pulled it off in Super Bowl 50 with basically half of Peyton Manning's body tied behind his back, but it was still Peyton Manning. It was still one of the all-time greats leading the way, despite his shortcomings and the way his physical attributes fell apart. The Broncos at this stage, for me, I'm in kind of a cautious wait-and-see mode in terms of how I view their prospects for 2017 and the postseason and all that. We don't know what they're going to do in free agency yet. We don't know what their draft haul is going to look like yet. And even if we did, it would still be hard for me to say, yeah, that sounds right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, higher or at least tied with Oakland in the Super Bowl odds. No, we just don't know. I mean, Paxton Lynch could come out if the Broncos end up committing to him fully. He could come out, and like we see many young players do. I mean, look at Derek Carr, who, granted, was a starter right out of the gates. But this was his third season in the league before you really started seeing him being a factor that raised all boats. You know, and that's what separates the good quarterbacks, the average quarterbacks, from the greats. And it's the greats that makes it all the way. And that is the ability to raise all ships, put a team on your back, and you, as the quarterback, are the difference maker. You're the reason why they're getting over the hump, especially in key moments. You know, you could say what you will about Matt Ryan, but he turned in an MVP caliber season. And there's a reason why his team was in the Super Bowl. We don't know how the Broncos, what the complexion of that quarterback situation is going to be. I mean, frankly, and we've talked about it on this show, Luke, Trevor Siemian might not even be on the roster come August. I mean, if the Broncos are truly going to try and commit to Paxton Lynch, which many signs are pointing in that direction, they might be better off choosing to just trade him, get him out of the way, so that there is no perceived competition, there is no perceived controversy at the quarterback position, and allow Lynch to take all of the reps and allow Lynch to kind of start molding his own leadership without feeling like he's in someone else's shadow. But for me, Luke, again, without running on and on, it just comes down to the quarterback position. Until there's clarity there, I have a real hard time saying, yeah, the Broncos, I mean, I'm with you. At this stage, I see them as the third best team in the AFC West, even though the Kansas City Chiefs, I think, have really maxed out their potential with Alex Smith as a quarterback. The Broncos are just right there, I think, at number three, at least for now, until proven otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the further we progress into the offseason, the more likely it appears that Tony Romo is going to get released. And if he hits the streets, if he ends up in Denver, I think that that number three in the AFC odds starts to become a little bit more appealing. You know, that kind of likelihood that they are the number three team coming out of this conference seems a little bit more likely.
Yeah.
But right now, I mean, they're tied with the Raiders for third, and I don't see it as even being that close. I just see Oakland as building on this. Derek Carr is, I think, going to take a whole nother step. Obviously, Khalil Mack was the best. He got 18 first place votes, making him the best defensive player in football, as opposed to 17 for Vaughn. So I think there's, you know, some debate about whether he was the best, but I think definitely that he's going to have a chance to just go out and can continue to just wreck shop in the AFC West. So I think that it's going to be Oakland, definitely more in the mix than Denver of those two player of those two teams at 16-1 odds.
Yeah, and as a quick aside before we get out of here, I don't think that the voters were wrong in naming Khalil Mack Defensive Player of the Year, because you look at Von Miller, and he turned in a phenomenal, you know, all-pro caliber year, no doubt. But you can't disappear down the stretch when all the chips are down and your team is trying to vie for a playoff berth and expect to win Defensive Player of the Year. And I don't say that to minimize Von's role and Von's impact. I mean, he's the best in the business, honestly. I mean, I do think he is a better player than Khalil Mack, I'll say that. But in terms of deserving that honor, you look at the last four games he turned in the season, and, you know, the stats just start melting away. And it's not always about stats, I'll grant you that, but you just can't disappear with production down the stretch and expect to win Defensive Player of the Year. It was close. He was so close to it. You thought this would be the year with J.J. Watt out, but came up short.
And I mean, is there any shame in it losing to Khalil Mack? I mean, granted, he is a Raider, but this guy made All-Pro at two positions last year. I mean, the guy's an animal, and I think he's going to just continue to assert his dominance over the NFL next season. Hopefully he just does it in 14 out of the 16 games and avoids the team in orange and blue.
There you go. Well, hey, it was great to be back in action. Thanks for listening, everybody. Be sure to follow at Locked On Broncos on Twitter. You can find Luke in the Twitterverse, at Luke Polglaze, myself, at Chad N. Jensen. We love hearing from you, so keep hitting us up. We have some plans for a show, a mock draft type of show coming up here in the near future, so stay tuned for that. Don't forget to subscribe, y'all. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Mile High Huddle.